Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and welcome to another wonderful program in the ongoing series of Listen to Older Voices. We're about to embark on quite an uplifting journey over three programs as we listen and share in the life and times of stroke survivor Simon Allsop. In part one, we get to know Simon, who was born in 1945 in Melbourne, and learn something of his early years, including the bullying issues he experienced at both primary and secondary school. Fortunately, Simon also discovered sailing, and with that, his self-image really improved, and by the time he got to university, his educational experiences were far better. He gained an engineering degree, but he decided he didn't want a career in engineering, but gained a job as a computer programmer at Ford, and his stories of learning how to program on punch cards make for some very funny stories. So, let's make a start. Here I am, speaking with Simon Allsop. Simon, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me into your home. Could I start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
I was born in the Alfred Hospital in Windsor in Melbourne.
And what year was that, Simon?
1945. My dad had returned nine months before from New Guinea.
Right.
And my mum and dad were married in Melbourne. But because Dad had been in New Guinea, he was on Atabrin. And Atabrin was what the army gave the troops to ward off malaria.
Oh, okay.
But it turned you yellow. And in the middle of the Japanese war, Mum married a yellow man. But they were married on Christmas Eve, I think it was. No, I wasn't there. And getting a new uniform was very, very hard because the shops were shut and there was rationing anyhow.
Right.
He was a captain in magnificent new uniform. The photographs looked terrific.
I bet.
He'd worn his other uniform all through New Guinea. It was a wreck. He couldn't get married in it. Well, he could have.
But yes, for obvious reasons.
Yes.
Talking about Dad, what would be your earliest memories then, Simon, if I take you back in time?
Earliest memories of my dad?
Well, just of what comes to mind when I say to you, think back to yourself as a boy, what do you recall?
Well, a tough dad.
A tough dad?
Yes. And my mum explained he only wanted the best for me.
Right, so it was what they called tough love, wasn't
it?
Well,
now they do,
yes.
A very fair dad as well.
Right. When the war was over and the army was over, what sort of line of work did he go into then?
He was an engineer. With his brother, who was an architect.
Right.
And he was the engineer in a firm of architects.
Okay.
Which, well, he'll explain a bit about what happened in the story later on.
Okay. What about Mum? What sort of woman was your mother?
Oh, lovely and soft.
Yes?
Yes. I looked to Mum rather than Dad.
Right.
She was a great help.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
One sister.
Was she older or younger?
Younger.
Right.
And, in fact, she's my first memory.
Right.
My first memory is walking down the passageway to the bedroom behind Mum with my one-year-old sister on my mum's shoulder. My mum had a nappy on her shoulder because she was patting my sister's back.
Right.
Who immediately produced a stomach full of milk.
Oh.
It shocked me. And that's the memory I've got.
I can understand why you'd remember that.
That's my oldest memory, because I would have been two by then.
That's not bad, two, yes.
Because there were 3 years between us, and I think my sister would have been one.
Right. What do you remember about the early family home? What was that like?
Well, we lived in it for a long time. It was in Doncaster Road, North Bourne. Now it's all residential. Dad had to put up a fence to keep the cows out.
So it was rural almost.
It was rural, yes.
Right.
And we used to go blackberrying down by the creek looking out for snakes at the what is now the bottom of Bourne Road. And Doncaster Road became busier and busier. And finally it got made much less noisy.
Right.
Must have been a very healthy lifestyle for a boy, though.
Well, yes. But I had a problem because I was completely ball uncoordinated.
Right.
Therefore, I didn't play sport very well.
No, well...
I couldn't play cricket. I couldn't catch the football. I was unfit as well. And I had decided early on that I was never going to hit anybody because fighting was amongst the young kids, the kindergarten.
At kindergarten?
I'm going back as... You wanted me to go back as far as I can.
Yeah, I'm just surprised they were fighting in kindergarten.
Oh, just kids.
Just kids being kids.
Being kids, that's all. But they teased me a lot. There was a building going on, so somewhere the company had dumped a load of screenings ready for the concrete, and the other kids made me stand on the pile of screenings and they took shots at me with the screenings on the bottom, from the bottom of the pile.
Kids can be so cruel, can't they?
Yes.
Yeah. That must have been pretty tough on you.
Well, it was. But in fact, later on I had a stroke and I realised that the strength I developed just looking after myself really helped.
Strange how things happen like that, isn't it? But at the time it wasn't pleasant for me.
No. I even got locked, the kindergarten teacher even locked me in a cupboard, which I definitely remember. I think I talked in class.
Oh.
And I don't know how long it was, but it seemed like hours
in
this dark cupboard.
What about primary school? Were things any better in primary school? No.
No.
Did you enjoy the schooling side of it?
Well, occasionally. But
occasionally.
It was all tied up with schooling very closely.
Yeah.
I went to Camberwell Grammar. And you'd take a deep breath with a sigh then. Why did you do that?
Let me
interview you for a minute.
Well, I would have assumed that a place like Camberwell Grammar, there would have been a little bit more respect for each other.
No. That what you did with kids who bullied, you moved the kid on in those days. You didn't stop the bullying.
Wow.
It's the same as the sex issues we have now.
Yep.
You move the person who's making the trouble on to another environment. So one day I refused to go to school and cried.
Mm.
Just wouldn't go. And finally Dad got an appointment with the headmaster, whose name was Reverend Mr. Timpson. And at home we called him Tommy, but I would never have dared to do that at school.
Oh, no.
So Mr. Timpson called us into his office and he said he'd been talking to the other APS schools about who could take me, who had a vacancy. And he went through the list of the headmasters they'd been talking to. There was Jack didn't have a list, but John didn't have a position, but James did. And so I could go to James's school. So Dad asked, which school is James in charge? It was James Darling. I remember the look on Dad's face when Mr. Timpson said it was Geelong Grammar. Dad said, that's exactly... I hope the radio caught that breath you just took.
That was
exactly how Dad reacted. And I was sitting there. He almost, well, he could have said no, but he didn't.
He didn't?
No. So my parents really tried hard to get me over my problem.
Mm.
And nobody could afford to board at Geelong Grammar. Even now, it's horribly expensive. But I went.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
Greaves, and I'm talking with Simon Allsop, and Simon is recalling his early years, particularly as they related to his school experiences.
My first year at Geelong Grammar was at Timbertop.
Very
and
famous.
And that was very good.
Mm.
And the same thing happened at Timbertop.
Oh.
And I got home during the first school holidays, and I realised, obviously, the problem was me. But I didn't know how to fix it. So I didn't do anything about it.
Well, you're only a boy, and... Even now, if you look back then, what could you have done?
Well, I don't know.
No, exactly. I think that's part of the problem of society, isn't it? To blame the victim and make the victim wear the consequences and say, will you fix it up?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay, you got through secondary school. While you were getting through secondary school, you were uncoordinated, so obviously sports, as you said, were out of the question. Did you have anything that you did enjoy doing? Were there any hobbies or social activities that you did enjoy?
Yes. I'll cut to summers. My dad's brothers He had three brothers, and they moved, each of them bought a house in Mount Eliza. One of them came down here to live permanently.
Right.
Another one just had it as a holiday house.
Right.
And Dad thought we should come to Mount Eliza too, because he found out how nice it was.
Mm.
Mount Eliza is a little bit of heaven.
Well, it still is now, but back then it would have even been more so, because again, it wouldn't have been so populated.
So, no, it wasn't, but the roads were all made, but they were no houses.
Right.
The bush was cut ready for housing, but so there were blank paddocks. And at the bottom of a road called Kanyang Road, which leads from the Pian Highway to the beach, there's a road which runs parallel to the beach called Cunella Crescent. It's quite steep, and in those days we used to have wet winters. It was a dirt road, and the water that ran down the hill into the gutter, there was quite a lot of water.
Of course.
And when Cunella Crescent went around a corner, the water decided it wasn't going to go that way, went straight down to the Irrimal Creek. And as it did that, it cut off the block, and it became 8 feet deep.
Wow.
It was a creek by itself.
Yeah.
It was very soft soil. You could see that was sand all the way. It went standing in the let me say, my mum wouldn't jump what was a washer where the gutter had been. And I would as a teenager.
Of course.
And it was, at times, it was from 6 to 8 feet wide and about 8 feet deep.
So she was basically isolated when that happened. She was stuck on the property.
No. We came at it from the road, part of the road that was properly made.
Oh, okay.
Just couldn't go onto the block.
Right.
So Dad went to the local real estate agent and said, who owns the block at? We'd like to buy it. We couldn't find out who owned it, but the local estate agent could.
Hmm.
His name was David Rue. And David got in touch with the owner, who hadn't seen the block for 30 years. He came down and have a look to find out that the corner of it was missing. It was just there.
Why?
And he said to David, take what you can get for it. It had been an investment. Dad offered £60, which was an insultingly low price.
Even for those days.
Very insulting.
Right. Yes.
But the guy took it. So we became the owner of a block of land and a block of air.
A block of air as well.
But the first weekend we owned it, Dad bought down a whole lot of couchgrass seedlings, and my sister and I had the job of battening down the sides. And you could see the water just falling out of the sandy parts, and there were a lot of water was running in the bottom of the creek, even though it was a dry day.
Wow.
And
so did
the sides were falling in. Next weekend, we came down. Every seedling had taken.
Well, no surprise, got plenty of water.
Plenty of water, yes. And finally, because Dad was an engineer with a firm of architects, he had been dealing with the councils. He got the council to put in a big drain and fix the street properly. We could finally get a builder's truck onto the blocker, and one of the a house he and the office designed was built there.
Goodness.
And all through my teenage years, we came down to Mount Eliza for summer, our summer holidays.
So they'd be very pleasant memories.
They are very pleasant memories.
Yes.
Dad's brother had been the Commodore at Davis Bay Yacht Club.
Right.
So we went down to Davis Bay and really liked it, and we joined Davis Bay. And it was a very family-orientated yacht club. And there were all the families had daughters and sons. So all us blokes took out all the daughters one after the other as we got to 18 and 19.
Yes.
And there was a plentiful supply of young girls and a plentiful supply of blokes for the girls.
So
we all had a good time.
Yes.
I didn't really realise how good it was at the time.
You don't, do you?
No.
You were also fortunate in being in that generation that grew up during the 60s when so many changes were happening.
Yes.
And as you said, you don't realise at the time how good it was. But when you look back at that period in the 60s now, do you look back at it fondly?
Yes. Because I developed a friendship with a bloke who had a yacht but didn't have a crew. So I crewed with him every weekend.
Right.
And he also was a Geelong grammar. His dad towed the boat down to Geelong for school, and I was able to do sailing for a sport on Lyneburners Bay, and that made it an awful lot better.
Must have been good for your self-confidence, too.
As well, yes.
Yes.
So we came back from school much better and could sail better at Davies Bay and beat boats we couldn't beat before we went to school.
Oh, the grin must have been from ear to ear when that started happening, because you'd had such a hard time, really, at school.
I had.
And then all of a sudden you've got a little badge of proudness.
Well, I'm not sure about proudness.
Well, you didn't feel
achievement. A badge of happiness, anyway.
Happiness.
Achievement. From where I'm sitting, we've got a house that now looks over the bay where Davis Bay Yacht Club sails. And I look out on a Saturday and think, gosh, I had such a good time there.
Yes.
The whole family did.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives.
When Mum and Dad died, not at the same time, we mixed their ashes together and threw them into the water off Davies Bay.
Oh, how great. I mean, a nice ceremony.
And, yes, my brother-in-law also was... a member.
Right.
We went out in his boat. A gust of wind came up and blew the ashes back on me. So when I got home, I had a shower and I sang to myself, I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair. And I did. Dad would have loved that joke.
I hope you don't mind me saying one of the funniest things I've heard for a long time. I
mean,
the irony of it all is not lost.
So... when I go, which I'm planning to be a long time in the future.
I hope so.
Yeah. That's what I want to happen to me.
Ashes on the Bay.
Ashes on the Bay. I had such a nice time there.
You have a while connection ago with it, don't you?
I do.
You do. You have a connection.
And the bloke, I say, is still my best friend.
Oh, how excellent. That's
He's now in Adelaide.
He's in Adelaide.
But and he comes over here every now and then.
Yeah.
And let me continue that story. I was in the middle of telling you another story. I'm one of the few blokes I know who regularly catches up with his old girlfriends. I have an ex-girlfriend's lunch. One of the people I took out was a very social lady, and I discovered she had the phone numbers of all her friends.
Right.
So I went down the list and picked out the phone numbers of all the girls I actually took out when I was 20 or 19.
Goodness me.
Rang them all up and invited them to a bring a plate lunch. And they all came.
Had they met before?
Well, they were all part of the beach scene. They were all old friends. Right. The girls went around in a clique like
yes,
you do.
Yes, true.
And they knew each other very well.
Right.
And it's a reunion.
That's a pretty novel one, I have to say.
No, so I don't know anybody else who regularly sees lots of his old girlfriend. They come with their partners, and they've taken Brenda, my wife, a little while to work out. There's no risk. We're all in our 70s now.
I'd like to talk to you about how you and Brenda met in a few minutes, but before we do that, at what age did you leave school?
I left school to go to do engineering.
At uni, of course.
Melbourne Uni.
Melbourne Uni.
How old would I have been? 1970.
Well, you would have been about 20. Wouldn't
normal.
You, time?
I had failed leaving and matric, so I was 2 years late. You can imagine my dad's horror. Two more years of job grammar.
Oh yes, the cash register.
Yes. And we were driving up the PN Highway. We'd got a copy of the paper, and I said to him, my number's not in the English list. We nearly had an accident.
Oh dear.
He nearly drove into a tree.
He wasn't amused.
He wasn't amused. But he kept stuck by me. The family.
Good for
did.
Him.
And I went back to Geelong for two more years.
Melbourne Uni, was that experience any different?
Quite. I had the attitude I was leaving all the blokes I didn't like and the boys I didn't like behind. None of them got to university.
Right.
And I tried hard to get there. Having failed.
Yeah.
Twice.
So it was a good experience.
Yeah, well, yeah, within reason, yes.
Oh, well, I mean, every experience we have has two sides to the coin.
Which are you talking about? The university?
The university of Melbourne.
Yes, it was a good experience.
Yeah. Did you do well there, or was it a struggle?
Well, I hadn't learned how to study properly. That part was a struggle. I also failed first year and failed second year and got back in each year. My failures were very minor.
Right.
And then both years, the professorial board allowed me to continue to repeat the year.
Well, they made the right decision, didn't they?
They did. I got to the end of engineering, and I couldn't find my number on the pass list.
Oh, no.
Then I looked in the honours.
Oh, you're kidding. It was on the honours.
It was in the honours list.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it.
Oh.
And the professorial board called me before them, and they said, we've taken into account that you failed first year and second year. You really got a third class honours. But we've marked you down to a pass. And I thought to myself, I don't need an honours degree for my profession. I'll shut up. Because they haven't actually given me anything yet.
That's right.
The full board could actually take away my pass mark even, if I argue.
Yes.
So I sit there and said, thank you very much, gentlemen. Yes. Not meaning that at all.
No. But you walked out then with that piece of paper, which was
yes,
so important.
Yes.
What did that piece of paper lead you to?
Well, I had already decided that if that was engineering, I didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I had expected that I would spend all my life being an engineer.
Reasonable.
Which is what you used to...
You for your dad. Yeah.
Life, jobs weren't mobile, unlike today. I've got a wonderful story about my son who's had lots of jobs.
Well, I certainly want to hear about that later too.
Well, that'd be good.
But so what job did you take up then?
Well, I thought if I'm not going to do engineering, I've got to do something.
Mm.
But the best part of engineering was the computing part. I'd learned Fortran and COBOL.
Right.
And I went for a job as a systems analyst, a programmer, with the Ford Motor Company. And they took me on with their graduate program. Because they were after people who had got a university degree to prove that they could think. Didn't matter what the university degree was, providing you had one.
Because
but engineering was not a bad degree for Ford.
No. Very sympathetic to their business.
Yes.
But you would have gone into programming really the very early stages of it, wasn't
yes,
you?
Yes, at the university. They had a computer, IBM 7044, that a company had bought and then not wanted to take delivery of. So IBM gave it to the university. There was no disk. There was no memory, 64K of memory only. And it was tape to tape.
Yes.
And punch cards. If you dropped punch cards on the floor, it was a disaster.
I can imagine. Did you ever drop the punch cards?
I certainly did, only once.
Oh, dear.
that we modelled a company in Fortran so that it looked at products and looked at raw materials, and so many raw materials went into each product. And all we modelled, we wrote all that out in a computer program, and it was fascinating. So that's why I went to Ford in their graduate IT department. Well, not as a graduate IT.
Yes.
Join Simon and I next week for the second part of his story, which is full of rich stories about work, travel by bus from Kathmandu to Britain, and how he suffered from a stroke, and his determination not to let it leave him bedridden. All this and much more next week with Simon Allsop on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Community Radio Network. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.